Today on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. policy on Africa as seen through the lens of the Congressional Black Caucus. We'll discuss President Obama's Power Africa initiative and the CBC's role in shaping U.S.-African relations. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, June 11th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello, Shaka.
And hello, Mariama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we are talking about the significance of the Congressional Black Caucus in shaping U.S.-Africa policy.
A rare topic of discussion with so much to say. Coming up later in our social media inbox, we'll reveal thoughts we've received from our audience. You at home can also participate by sending us emails or commenting on our Facebook page. We look forward to sharing your opinion, and that's ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, the Congressional Black Caucus is an organization made up of all the African-American members of the United States Congress. The CBC includes the Africa Task Force that works to improve financial and cultural exchange between the United States and Africa. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
United States Representative Gregory W. Meeks is a senior member of the House Foreign Relations Committee and co-chairperson of the Congressional Black Caucus's Africa Task Force. Friday, he's hosting an event in New York City called Engaging Wall Street on Power Africa. The networking event is fostering Power Africa business opportunities. President Barack Obama announced the $7 billion Power Africa initiative last year. Another $9 billion in initial commitments is coming from private sector partners.
Access to electricity is fundamental to opportunity in this age. It's the light that children study by, the energy that allows an idea to be transformed into a real business. It's the lifeline for families to meet their most basic needs. And it's the connection that's needed to plug Africa into the grid of the global economy. You've got to have power.
Last week in Addis Ababa, African energy ministers met with energy stakeholders from the United States. They heard from U.S. Secretary of Energy, Ernest Moniz.
I'm very pleased to announce a new U.S. government Power Africa initiative, or sub-initiative, called Beyond the Grid.
This part of President Obama's Power Plan for Africa uses private sector partnerships to establish small-scale energy projects with another $1 billion in investments. Very few people have access to electricity in sub-Saharan Africa. Ethiopian Prime Minister Desalegn Haile Mariam.
Until recently, the private sector has not shown much interest to invest in power sector in Africa due to its long return period. We, the African governments, also have not created the necessary environment to ease the risk associated with long-term investment.
Darius Mans is president of Africare, a nonprofit group committed to building sustainable, healthy, and productive communities.
Power Africa is hugely important. Power is the binding constraint to Africa sustaining its growth and prosperity. We see it in communities across the continent. Not having access to electricity is a problem that drives deforestation in Africa. Women have to go out and collect firewood for energy. It takes hours when they could be putting that time into productive activities at home and generating incomes. Young people who are unable to study at night because they don't have access to electricity. Healthcare, we see it in the work that we do. Having access to medicine stored at the proper temperature requires electricity. So it's the big challenge, and I salute the president for focusing on this agenda and getting everybody focused, not just what the government can do, the U.S. government, but also African governments, and very importantly, the private sector.
AfriCare often works with members of the Congressional Black Caucus to bring Africa and the United States closer.
On power, you may know some members of the Congressional Black Caucus have been co-sponsors of the Electricity Act that is hopefully going to find its way to the president's desk for signature. Just getting that bipartisan support for Africa, for power in particular, Congressional Black Caucus has played a huge role.
Six countries have been selected to participate in the first phase of the Power Africa initiative: Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Ghana, Liberia, and Nigeria. The Power Africa initiative aims to install 10,000 megawatts of newly generated electric power, to bring electric power to 20 million new customers, and to improve electric reliability across the continent. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. We expect to be joined shortly with Gregory Meeks, who serves in the U.S. House of Representatives for the U.S. state of New York's 5th Congressional District. Mr. Meeks serves as the senior member of the House Foreign Affairs and Financial Services Committees and the ranking member of the Subcommittee on Financial Institutions and Consumer Credit, and the co-chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus Africa Task Force. And Suleiman Nyang, professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C. Well, Professor Nyang, I have to say frankly that once again I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka. It's always a pleasure to be on your programs.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Well, Professor Jiang, you listened to the piece, and in particular, Darius Manz, the president of AfriCare, he says that Power Africa initiative, in his words, is hugely important to Africa. Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I will partly agree with him in the sense that power is important because it deals with all aspects of development. You cannot have a good life if you don't have good health. The Romans used to say, mens sana in corpore sane. You see, you have a healthy mind in a healthy body. That's an old Roman narrative, and mm-hmm. it's relevant. Mm-hmm. You need power. Africa cannot develop industrially without power.
Cannot move without power.
Yeah, power comes in different forms. What you hear in your piece is that what he was talking about as head of AfriCare, AfriCare has been very much involved with many African countries through development schemes. Mm-hmm. So they are very much aware of the need for agriculture in these African countries. Agriculture without power is not very effective. Secondly, even if people have food to eat, but they don't have sanitation and they don't have health, they are going to have a problem because they need electricity to feed their kids. If you go to a hospital and you don't have power, forget about it. Your life support systems will be vulnerable.
So in that case, what do you think that needs to happen, needs to be done in order for this particular initiative to succeed?
Yes, I think the initiative is going to succeed if you first of all have political cooperation on the part of the African leaders, that the money given to them is not siphoned off from what they intended. That's number one. That's political corruption could undermine the whole scheme. You may have good intentions, but the intentions could very well be wasted. Second problem is, if you have this Power Africa, and it is genuine on both sides of the fence, then the Americans should pay close attention to what is happening to that dollar bill that is crossing the Atlantic. Thirdly, the Africans who are benefiting, the NGOs and all these people, should be watching the dollar. If you say, pay attention to where you give your money, and this way power will make a big difference, because power is going to transform the agricultural, industrial, and social cultural lives of the Africans.
What about the African governments? Of course, as you mentioned, how come up to now they hadn't been able to figure this out?
Well, this is a problem I see. If the president went to Africa and gave money to certain countries, these people, we have to put their feet to the fire. This is where I challenge. I'm a scholar, we are scholars. We can do the research to figure out power in the African countries, from Angola, Algeria, all the way to Zimbabwe. And we know what is going on with regard to power. Scholars have done this. Second thing is we have business people. The business people are the most affected, because if there is power in their countries, they can do business. And if they can do business, people, the customers, will be able to benefit. Then you have to deal with the people who are concerned about the health and sanitation of their people, those who are in medical and health. If they don't have energy, forget about it. You see, power comes in the form of transportation. If you don't have power, how are you going to have transportation? One of the major weaknesses of Africa is power deficiency.
I don't know whether you have heard this concept known as road shedding. You go to different African countries, and you are in the cities, you could be in a hotel, and suddenly the power that you are enjoying disappears. In some countries, in fact, sometimes they say, road shedding can actually last days, not simply hours. Why is it that the African governments and the businesses on the continent have not frankly been able to find out a way of making sure that the literal power that they have at least can work?
Actually, Shaka, you are touching the crucial problem for Africa. The most humiliating thing is to have a guest from outside, and you are supposed to be hosting them, and then all of a sudden, nature is very generous to us, because during the day, nature gives us sunlight, and you have it for a long time. But at night, when the moon is raining, the Africans don't even have electricity. That's the highest level of demonstrating industrial scientific development of a society. The liberation of the human being from the captivity to the sun. That is one good way of developing, defining development. Development is the capacity of a human society to be able to create substitute to nature of their own initiative. Mm-hmm. It is not working in Africa right now. That's the problem. We are so dependent on the sun during the daytime that at night we cannot demonstrate any creativity in keeping ourselves with light.
If you compare President Obama's initiative with the initiative that came about under the John F. Kennedy administration, and I'm talking about the student airlift, what do you think is perhaps more important in terms of development as far as Africa is concerned?
Yeah, I think at this particular point in time, I'm not in policy making here, but what I can suggest to our policymakers, from the president, the congressmen, senators, all of them, what could be done to really raise the status of America in Africa? We have the Army Corps of Engineers. They can build good roads. Mm-hmm. That is one thing America can do very well. They can begin to build the roads in Africa. And when you begin to build Africa, then American business people will have opportunities in Africa. They can begin to develop highways, tolls. They can begin to have pipelines. You will change Africa. If you give the Corps of Engineers in the United States here, just give them 15 years. I can tell you this. In 20 years, you will change the whole of Africa if the Africans are willing to cooperate. But are they willing to cooperate? I don't know.
Instead of tanks and APCs and what have you?
No, we don't need drones. We need the Corps of Engineers. And American know-how, Yankee ingenuity, must be present in the continent of Africa. The Chinese are coming, the Japanese are coming, the Koreans are coming, the Brazilians are coming. What are we doing?
So you're talking about the BRICS?
The BRICS
nations. The Russians, the Indians, the Chinese.
No, you see, that's the most formidable. During the Cold War, we were very worried about the Russians and their ideology. Today, what Americans should be very concerned about is how the dollar is shrinking because of our own negligence to make the kind of deals we have to name.
We'll come back to that. Before we pause for a short break, we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Representative John Conyers Jr. of Michigan and Representative Charles Rangel from New York founded the Congressional Black Caucus in 1971. Both men are still serving. The current CBC has 42 members representing 22 states, the District of Columbia, and the Virgin Islands. 15 members are women. Representative Marcia Fudge from the 11th District of Ohio is the chairwoman of the Congressional Black Caucus. The CBC has historically been outspoken on issues that disproportionately or disparagingly affect people of color. The major CBC initiatives have included the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act of 1986, signing the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday into law, civil rights and voter protection, and the Trayvon Martin resolution to repeal the Stand Your Ground laws.
Cup Nonstop, VOAFootball.com.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Now, Professor Nyang, how do you respond to some critics who have been saying that this Power Africa initiative from the Obama administration really comes about because, in their words, not mine, it is a reaction to the invasion of Africa from Beijing, China, from Brazil, from India, and from other emerging economies?
Well, there's truth to that statement. I am familiar with these narratives. People who are critical of the president for coming up with this idea. Those people who are around the president, I'm sure most have had serious debates among themselves as to how can we respond to the threat of the BRICS nations. This is a real threat now. I think American leaders must pay close attention. During the Cold War, after Truman, Americans were very worried about the Soviet Union and the ideological penetration of Africa. The reason why Americans are very lukewarm about what's happening in Africa, first of all, corporate America has not been very successful in building bridges with African businesses. If you look at Nigeria, for example, Nigeria could have been a very good partner of the United States, not only in providing oil, but also in terms of successful business. The Nigerian economy could be one of the most successful economies, like India and China, etc. But because of, unfortunately, 419, which really damaged the credibility of businesses to the point that American businesses are not going to accept any letter of credit from Nigeria, and they extend it to other African countries. That's the problem.
That despite the fact that Nigeria happens to be the largest economy in Africa?
Yes, the thing is, well, this is because of World Bank new arithmetics of tallying figures. You see, Nigeria could now become almost half a trillion economy in the next 10, 15 years, depending on what I learned. I'm not an economist, I'm a political scientist, but what I learned from my colleagues in the World Bank is that this new mathematics that they're doing has really changed the position of Nigeria. And today, Nigerians take pride that their economy is doing better, mathematically speaking, or economically speaking, than South Africa. But what must be made categorically clear to Nigerian leaders, so long as they're not able to deal with Boko Haram and have law and order in their society, and they change their image with regard to business, America cannot deal with them in terms of business. Now, the rest of the African countries that are supposed to come to Washington, D.C. here must have good record in terms of transparency. They must demonstrate good governance, mm-hmm. so that if you're a contractor from the United States, nobody is going to double-cross you. These are important issues we have to address. So the Corporate Council, the NGOs, the diaspora Africans who are very interested, one issue is remittances. That could be debated here. Mm-hmm. How remittances become the only source of revenue for the African countries, mm-hmm. bigger than the foreign direct investments in Africa. These are issues we have to address.
Earlier, you told me about Stephen Hayes, the man in charge of
the Corporate Council
for Africa, on Africa.
Yes, yes. They live in D.C. here.
What does he say about what Japan is doing in as far as trying to help Africa develop that perhaps the United States is not doing?
What I'm reading through the internet is that people like him are very concerned about what is happening in terms of number of issues. Number one, if the president is going to bring all these African countries, will they be able to interact with him the way the Chinese have done? That's on the record. You can verify that. Mm-hmm. The Chinese president was able to give some kind of attention to the individual African leaders. There's protocol. Now, what I'm learning from Hayes and others is that, you see, if the president is going to treat these African leaders, will they have their 15 minutes moment?
15 minutes of fame.
Will that happen? I don't know. You see, the people who are working on this development, I'm sure they're paying attention to this. How do you develop the protocol so that you get these African leaders, they have their moment of fame, as you journalists would say, or broadcasters would say. The big question, I think, for all of us really is, come August, will all the African leaders feel that, hey, I will have an ego massage by being in Washington and shake hands with the president of the United States, mm-hmm. who is the first black president of the United States? Will they be sufficiently induced to come, or will they be torn off to say, why would I go there? What am I going to get?
And what about the American media, the American mainstream media? Do you think that it is going to focus on that particular event? Or is it going to be, as some would say, has happened in the past, when sometimes you have several African leaders in town and you don't even know that they are actually around?
Yeah, no, I think you are raising a good point. You see, those of you who are in the media are very much aware of this. I can get my students to investigate this phenomenon, and we can speak with authority about what has been the American media approach to African leaders. The record is out there. Some of our kids can investigate this. What I'm saying very clearly is many of these African countries have lobbyists working for them. They spend millions of dollars. Do they get the payback from their investment in these lobbyists for coverage? This summit is the biggest test for African leaders and their lobbyists with regard to media coverage. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes certain part of the media give more coverage to African leaders than the other colleagues in the media. So this August is going to be very important. You read in the media, they tell you that traffic congestion, because remember, you're coming from Dulles Airport, towards DC, is that something that the Maryland State Police and the people, they'll have to coordinate that mm-hmm. with the Secret Service and all the other things. That's their job. Mm-hmm. As scholars, what we are interested really is media time for the African leaders. They have their embassies. This is the greatest moment in the history of Africa, that for the first time, the African leaders have a president who welcomed them. Remember now, let's go back to history. Kwame Nkrumah was the first African leader to come here. Kennedy gave him a state dinner. During the Obama presidency, Not a single African leader had state dinner the way Kennedy did for Kwame Nkrumah.
What about Mwai Kibaki of Kenya? He got something of the sort back in 2003.
Yeah, well, you see, that people have to take that into account. You see, you have to understand the context for that particular time. You see, because you see, when you have Bush coming in, Bush had to do something. Remember, the Americans were fighting terrorism. What happened in Kenya and Tanzania? You forgot that. That was linked.
You know, I didn't really want to go into the issue of the Congressional Black Caucus without Congressman Gregory Meeks being here, but we are being told that he's running late due to circumstances beyond his control. What do you think about the role that the Congressional Black Caucus has been really playing in terms of influencing U.S. policy towards Africa?
Yeah, the Congressional Black Caucus has to be, in the next couple of minutes I have, let me just identify 5 points for us to remember. And all those people who are listening, whether they're from the United States or they're in Africa. Number one, the Congressional Black Caucus became important when we have growing numbers of African Americans who are there. I was brought to this country myself by Adam Clayton Powell, who was the most powerful black American in this country when I came here. And you see,
from New York.
Adam Clayton Powell was one of the most visible African Americans in the Congress. I was brought here. I spent 1 year in Mississippi because of his activities before I went to Hampton. And when his administration, you see, was.
What did you do? What did you do to get his attention?
No, because you see, I was very active. In those days, they were all fighting communism. They wanted to get African, just like Tom Mboya brought a generation before I came here. I belong to the second generation of Africans who came here. So what I'm saying, the Congressional Black Caucus came out of that narrative of Congressman Dix. And Dix was the mentor of the gentleman who became actively involved in South Africa, Randall Robinson. Works for him. And Dix would be one of the leaders who were very active in African issues at the Congress. So Congressman Payne is gone, but he did a lot. Together with many other people. I was hoping that Congressman Dix would shed more light on what they are doing now. The Congressional Black Caucus is a reality. There are two issues that must be taken into account. One is, what has been the role of the Congressional Black Caucus with regard to Africa policy? They were involved. They are involved. Second thing is, there are some scholars and intellectuals like Ron Walters from Howard University, Bob Cummings, he is now deceased, both of them, and many other colleagues have been very much involved with the Congressional Black Caucus over the years. And we have people like Randall Robinson, Mel Foote, and many other young people who are out of the Peace Corps narrative, who were very much part of that Kennedy legacy, who became actually involved. We're talking about our colleagues from AfriCare. Sipen Lucas was one of those people. So they were actively involved working with these Congress people. So when you talk about the role of the Congressional Black Caucus, you talk about a large number of them who are genuinely Pan-Africanists, not all of them, but some of them. And they have been actively involved in promoting African diaspora. The big problem we have is some of them tend to support the dictators in Africa. And that has been the reason why the dialogue between the African diaspora and the Congressional Black Caucus.
But of course, they did something very important when they sided with the people of South Africa against apartheid.
Well, that was the major achievement. That's why people like Randall Robinson used to work there. He was working with Dix. You see, so he came out of there, and then they influenced a number of people. And his brother, who was working with ABC, helped promote the dialogue. This is part of the history.
Randall Robinson.
Yes, you see.
Max Robinson.
You see, and there are many other people, Harry Belafonte. There are a whole many Americans who are involved. You don't have to be a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. We have many African-American intellectuals who work very hard to push. They attend all the annual meetings of the Congressional Black Caucus. Ron Walters, I know very well. Jesse Jackson and all these other people, you have like number of people who are involved in this narrative. So when we talk about the Congressional Black Caucus, we're talking about the black struggle to bring meaning. Adam Clayton Powell was the fellow who instigated Kwame Nkrumah to go to the Bandung Conference. He did.
Bandung in where?
And the State Department didn't want him to go to the Bandung conference, but he went.
And Bandung is where?
Bandung was in Indonesia.
Indonesia.
That was a major development in the history
of the non-aligned movement.
Non-aligned movement came out of that.
Well, you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, but first here is Mariama Njaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, it's always such a pleasure to listen to Professor Nyang. He definitely takes me back to college, listening to all these history classes. I'm so happy he's here today. Thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Meanwhile, here is our letter of the week.
Often Jeremiah in Kampala, Uganda writes, "The CBC view toward U.S. foreign policy in Africa should be a point of emphasis because the overall policy toward the continent is no longer an effective policy. For example, in its early stages during the presidency of Jimmy Carter, the U.S. government introduced a bill to prohibit loans and new investment in South Africa and enforce sanctions on imports and exports on the apartheid regime. Now is the time for the CBC to use its power to bring an engaging U.S. foreign policy toward Africa and not an imperialist one."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Former Congressional Black Caucus member Ron Dellums, a 13-year member of the House from California's 9th Congressional District, along with other members of the CBC, called for economic sanctions against South Africa with the Anti-Apartheid Act of 1986. You spoke about it with Professor Nyang. That landmark act was the beginning of several major pieces of legislation that have affected the continent, including the current Electrifying Africa Act, designed to bring power to sub-Saharan Africa. But how many people in Africa know how influential the CBC can be and how much they care about their continent? Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, how effective is the Congressional Black Caucus in shaping U.S. policy towards Africa? Well, thanks all for using all our social media platform to weigh in on our topic. Let's begin with a comment from Taz Evrasto from Yei in Sudan, who writes, "I don't think the CBC's influence is effective. Most Americans have some influential factors that do not match our lives in Africa. We are politically suppressed, economically exploited, and socially wronged." Well, another comment comes from Ola Edo Nwosu from Abuja in Nigeria, who says, "I'm not seeing any impact. Africans themselves are not accepting the truth of U.S. policy toward Africa. Until the rotten tooth is removed, the mouth will continue to chew with caution." Well, Shaka, quite an interesting comment here, and poetically put, I wish we had him on the phone so he can actually explain to everyone what he really means. Who is this rotten tooth in this case, Shaka?
What about that, Professor Nyang? How do you react to that?
Well, I think the metaphor of the rotten tooth is very biting. I think the reason why the person is speaking in this light, the ambiguity of American policy towards Africa. Because you see, during the Cold War, American leaders supported dictators like Mobutu and the like. After the Cold War, America is not fully engaged with Africa. So many of these Africans who are watching at the United States would like to get consolation. The election of President Barack Obama was very controlling because many of them were happy that America is so advanced now morally and socially that they can have a black president. So they have high expectations. But many of them are disappointed because they don't think that Obama was going to deliver the way they expected.
Now, Professor, you talk about how people talk about how America used to support dictators like Mobutu Sese Seko wa Zabanga. Are you suggesting that America no longer supports dictators?
No. There are a lot of that is one of the reasons why we have a problem right now. I think there is a dialogue going on. It's the dialect of the deaf. We have a large number of Africans who are part of the African diaspora here, and they have to interact with a large number of African Americans who are also watching in Africa. But you see, then you also have corporate business interests and NGOs. These groups are not talking to each other. And that's one of the reasons why American policy is confused. And you see, the Africans who are watching don't see their whims taken care of through policy.
I see. Mariama, please share some more of the audience feedback.
Well, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from Joshua Joel from Mwanza in Tanzania, who writes, it is not effective enough toward changing U.S. policy toward Africa. The U.S. always aims to benefit its economy. And finally, Inusa Al-Hassan from Accra, Ghana says, the caucus has its framework built around the socioeconomic achievement of Africa in America. However, the U.S. has already established its tentacles regarding social and economic development. These are challenges that hinder the efforts of the Black Caucus. Well, Shaka, quite an interesting take here. What do you make of it?
Well, thank you so much. We are so blessed that we have now been joined by Congressman Gregory Meeks from New York. And you're from Queens, is that correct?
That is correct.
We're sorry that you couldn't join us from the top of the show, but you are here.
Yes, I apologize for not being. There's a little crazy things going on in the Hill. We had votes both on the floor and in my committee on financial services. Mm-hmm. So we had to take care of a little business there, but wanted to make sure we made it here.
Apologies accepted. Now, there are some people that have been sending in feedback via Facebook, and they seem to be rather critical of the Congressional Black Caucus in terms of how it has been influencing U.S. foreign policy towards Africa. How would you respond to that?
Well, I'd say that the Congressional Black Caucus have been the leading advocates for Africa. You know, we've taken the position, you know, just about every member of the CBC, first and foremost, that since we may not be able to identify the specific country in Africa we've come from, we've decided to adopt the whole country, the mm-hmm. whole continent, rather. Mm-hmm. And so we try to make sure that we are intricately involved in Africa. In fact, you know, I'm so involved with and focused on Africa. When I first came in to the United States Congress, I refused to take a trip anyplace else till I first went to Africa.
Really?
That was a focus. People were asking me to go to different continents and to different places. I said, no, I'm not going to go anywhere until I first go to Africa. And that's how committed I am. And everyone knows how committed until his death, his untimely death, as far as I'm concerned, Donald Payne was. He was the leader of the Congressional Black Caucus. He was the ranking member and the chair for the Africa Subcommittee. And in his absence, and now that he's left, Karen Bass, you know, she did everything that she could because now she is the ranking member. There's only two members of the CBC that's on the Foreign Affairs Committee. That's Karen and I now. And so Karen is the chair, the ranking member of the committee. We, Karen and I, both, because we were on the Foreign Affairs Committee, we head the caucus for the Congressional Black Caucus. And when you think about all the things, whether it's AGOA, that's led by, and we are focusing right now on GOA 2, mm-hmm. Trying to make sure that that happens. Whether it's, you know, in all of this, Africa gets lost in the immigration debate. And we need to make sure that Africa is very much in the forefront of the immigration debate. But also, you know, what we are looking at is what the president came out with not too long ago, of which the CBC has been intricately involved in, and that's energizing Africa. So much so that this Friday, for example, the June the 13th, I'm having a huge event in New York, on Wall Street, bringing various agencies and people together so that we can focus on what we can do and the investments that we should be able to have on the continent of Africa. And this is on top of what Barbara Lee, for example, has done in the continent when we started talking about making sure that we deal with prescription drugs and getting rid of HIV and AIDS and getting rid of the various other diseases that should have been wiped out and we've not been focused on. So we're trying to make sure that we do all of those. I also head, because of Africa, the Malaria No More Caucus, yes. Which is important, which we want to eradicate all of that, and that's part of what the CBC's commitment has been and has always been in regards to. So there's no one that's more of a leader in regard to the continent than members of the Congressional Black Caucus.
Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, we appreciate everyone's feedback, whether it's in social media or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can simply join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, the significance of the presidency at the United Nations General Assembly. We'll discuss that and more next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. Let me come back to you, Congressman Meeks. Talk to us very briefly about your agenda for Friday on June 13th.
Yeah, the agenda is energizing Africa. Number one, let me just say this first. We understand that one of the things that we need to do is to eradicate poverty. Mm-hmm. And we find that there is a direct correlation to areas that where there's no energy. Children can't learn when there's no electricity. You don't have the kind of sewer systems that are necessary and other, the lighting and internet access if there's no power. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is to make sure that we get connected and Americans are investing in the infrastructure of energy for Africa. So the president has come out with an announcement where there'd be some $14 billion worth of an investment in Africa, $9 billion coming from the private sector, and $5 billion coming from the United States government. Mm-hmm. We are going to have the various agencies, people from the State Department, OPIC, World Bank, IMF, African Development Bank, all of those that have the wherewithal to give capital and to join capital with private enterprises to look at some specific deals that could be done in various countries to help, energize Africa and bring Africa up to speed with reference to its energy. So we're looking to bring people to marry folks and also, to change the focus. For a long time, people, when they've looked at Africa in the past, we've only looked at, as was taking place now, the folks, unfortunately, they only look at some of the bad things that might be going on, when there's so many more good things that are going on that needs to be addressed. When you look at how the GDP in Africa is increasing and the opportunities to develop infrastructure and education, those are the things that we need to be focused on. And so we want to have individuals to focus on the great opportunities so that we look at Africa in a different point of view than we've had in the past and look at the great economic opportunities and not forgetting then that we're going to also focus on making sure that there's capacity building because we want to make sure this is a win-win, not just for investors from America coming in to invest money and that's it without any social responsibility so that we can create capacity of the Africans themselves so that they can then be the ones that are managing, be the ones that, that have the jobs, be the ones that become self-sustaining because that then creates an income for them themselves and it turns things around and makes it so that in this age of globalization, it puts everybody back into to the 21st century global connection, which is what we want to do. And this is about exposing Africa, the opportunities, as well as to show that it is important for us as Americans to make sure that Africans mm-hmm. are benefiting from it. Not as some other countries model, they come in with their own workforce, they come in with their own mind, they come in and they try to take the richness out to benefit someone else. We don't want that to happen. We're trying to do what we can to aid the continent in ways that it's a win-win situation.
A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. Today we are talking about the significance of the Congressional Black Caucus in shaping U.S.-Africa policy. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
The Congressional Black Caucus Africa Task Force works to improve the financial and cultural exchange between the U.S. and the continent. It also works to strengthen the bond between African Americans and Africa, creating opportunities for prosperity. Rep. Gregory Meeks of the 5th Congressional District in New York and Rep. Karen Bass of the 37th Congressional District in California are the task force co-chairs. The key U.S. legislation related to sub-Saharan Africa includes the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, of 2000, the Millennium Challenge Act of 2003, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief of 2003, the Boko Haram Terrorist Designation Act, and the Africa Counterterrorism Initiative Act of 2013, and the Electrify Africa Act of 2014.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidhu, and welcome back. If you have just joined us today, we are talking about the significance of the Congressional Black Caucus in shaping U.S.-Africa policy. Our distinguished guests are Gregory Meeks, U.S. House of Representatives for the U.S. State of New York's 5th Congressional District, and co-chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus Africa Task Force, and Suleiman Young, a professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's Thank great you being well, with you.
You're most welcome.
And I'd like to say that, you know, in your show, I noticed in some of my travels, you inspire those on the African continent. And that's what this is really all about. It's important because what you do is helping lift nations, not just a nation, but nations. And that's why this communication is tremendously important.
Profoundly honored for your compliments, sir. I have to ask you another question before I go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. You specifically emphasized a win-win situation. What exactly do you mean by that? Because a lot of people will tell you, we have heard that before, but we have yet to see tangible results on the table.
Well, I think what I mean by that is, well, I know what I mean by that, is in order to get people to invest, they need to know that there is a return on their investment. So that's a win for those who are American who invest on the continent of Africa, you know, and we see that kind of investment starting to increase. But it is also significant that Africa wins, and those of us on the Congressional Black Caucus We want to make sure that the countries of Africa are winning, and they win when it is job creating, when it's opportunities for individuals on the continent to see that their standards of living begin to increase and rise. Mm-hmm. And they have opportunity to resources that they had not had opportunities before. So if it was just fixing a road, for example, but no one from Africa was working on fixing that road, then they're not winning until such time you utilize the road. But the jobs that someone could earn an income, that doesn't help them. So what I want is the kind of investment where we can help with some of the capital flow mm-hmm. and some of the expertise that we have, but the Africans themselves are participating in the project so that they are creating the jobs and the skill so that they can continue it going forward.
You know as well as I do that in the United States, when you talk about Wall Street, somebody will ask you, what about Main Street? Now, when it comes to Africa, you have heard, I'm sure, a lot of criticism about how some African leaders have misused the resources. What is the reaction from Africa so far? One, from the governments, of course, but also from Africa's Main Street, the ordinary African people.
Well, I think that this is where this is key, because just what we utilized the Millennium Challenge, for example, there are a set of requirements to try to make sure that we're creating rule of law mm-hmm. and transparency so that we know that the money is being utilized for Main Street and not just for a few presidents or a few heads of states or a few people up at the top. And so therefore, if you set the standards in place with the transparency, then you can make, then Main Street will be able to be the beneficiaries of that investment. And so it's not just giving money to mm-hmm. the heads of states with no requirements. We are saying that if, in fact, you have these rules and regulations that are transparent, that are clear, and that can be followed through, that you have rule of law so that people know that if something is going wrong, it's not going to continue that way because you can take it to court and have the issues resolved, then the people of Main Street will be able to benefit. And so there's certain standards that will be looked at that will determine ultimately which countries will have the closest or have the right to invest. Then the hope would be the people on Main Street, because they got a role in this also, mm-hmm. that where they participate in elections, they're not going to elect or allow someone to lead who is corrupt and turns it around, because they're going to want to be a part of the process also, because they'll see the countries that are playing by the rules are benefiting and know that those that are not, because they're not playing by the rules of the game.
In that case, Congressman, allow us to go to some aspect of Africa's Main Street. Good evening, Clarence from Liberia. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka.
I am hugely terrific.
Thank you for the program.
Thank you. What's your question, sir?
Well, first of all, let me just say hello to your studio guest tonight. Let me say to the congressman, I heard him saying that there are a lot of good things we should talk about, and not just the bad ones. But of course, we think the bad ones are very huge, and the good ones are a little tiny. And so we talk about the huge one because it hurts us. Okay, let's put Liberia on the map with America. If you look at history, Liberia was founded by free American people, I won't say slaves. And just remember that most of these people, they were masters that slept with colored women, children, that left America to come to Africa. And everywhere they went, they drove them away. But when they got to West Africa, where they call Liberia today, they formed the Liberia.
So what is your question, Clarence? Clarence, what is your question, please? Because time is not our best ally.
Yeah, okay, Shaka. The question is, where is Liberia today into America's heart? America should be doing more to Liberia than what they are doing. I think the congressman needs to speak on that, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Congressman Mix.
I agree that there is a direct relationship for those individuals who were enslaved in America, and they left trying to find and finding freedom in Liberia. And I think that as a result, we do encourage. I mean, I know that, for example, Bob Johnson here has made major investments, et cetera, in Liberia. Mm. But I think that the key that we have contributed is with the current president, who has at least shown us that she's trying to make a difference from the violence that had been taking place when you had the disruptions in the streets. Mm-hmm. When the disruptions are in the streets, it's hard. It is hard for people to get involved and for the United States to come in on a military basis or anything of that nature, because the American taxpayer in general, not just African Americans, but the entire of America, you know, want to utilize their tax dollars not to get involved in those kinds of disputes. We had big arguments about getting involved in Iraq and Afghanistan. So it is difficult, but I think that we're looking for those avenues of investment in those areas to turn it around, and we'll focus on all of West Africa, because as I said, we can't identify the part of the country that we've come from, so we've adopted the entire continent. And so all of West Africa, we know, is extremely important, and we're going to work with any government that has shown that they are going to be transparent, honest, and open. And I think that the Congressional Black Caucus will be the leading voice in making sure that that happens.
Perhaps a final question. A lot of people on the African continent give you the credit for having helped to liberate South Africans from apartheid. Mm-hmm. And I think they're right, because the facts will speak for themselves. But how do you deal with the perception that when it comes to dealing with Africa, these are not my views, these are the views of critics, that you seem to be siding with African dictators more than the African people?
Well, you know what? I will say that in the past, that was America's policies. And that's why we get it past it. So we owe a debt. In the past, when you were talking about the Cold War, for example, it was. America was more focused at that particular time on trying to protect itself from quote-unquote communism that it upheld and put up some of the most vicious dictators of our time. And it is the root cause still of some of the problems that the continent has had, along with how colonialism divided up the continent to make it so that we were at one another's throats. But now we are in a post-Cold War period, and now for the first time you have more members of the Congressional Black Caucus than you've had ever. And so that's why you see the focus. A goal would never have been here but for the Congressional Black Caucus. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have seen the Millennium Challenge but for the Congressional Black Caucus. So here's a ways that we're trying, electrifying Africa, if it wasn't for the Congressional Black Caucus and the fact that finally America has made some progress by electing a president who looks like us, you know? And so that's progress that we've had to make in America, because America for a long time, we were second-class citizens, those of us who still lived here, and that's why many still tried to escape to Liberia, because they didn't have the respect here in this country. So, but, you know, don't think that we don't know, especially those in the Congressional Black Caucus, that for a long period of time, they say there was a democracy, but it wasn't a true democracy here. And so they did certain things that favored themselves, and we're trying to correct those wrongs now.
I hope we'll have another opportunity in the near future. Yes. To engage you for about an hour.
Yes, please.
Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Gregory Meeks, U.S. House of Representatives for the U.S. State of New York's 5th Congressional District and the co-chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus Africa Task Force, and Suleiman Young, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. Also, don't forget, tune in to Voice of America's Africa 54, a 30-minute daily TV magazine program that features what's trending in news, health, sports, and lifestyle. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.
I'm Roger Muntu with Washington Forum. This is VOA. Follow us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Washington Forum.